How long have you known about all this?
How long?!
We can discuss this later.
It is too late already.
Please!
You're gonna tell me what this has really been about?
You're hurting me!
And you are going to tell me what the mining ships are doing here.
They're not...
There is an armada! Up there. They're already unloading in Gelnovi and Liqua.
You couldn't even wait.
No.
Don't. You tell me it's a rumor, and I will throw you out that window.
This is Andor, Season 2, Episode 8, on the Logic Gate Podcast. I'm your host, Scott, with my friends...
Jason.
And
Doug.
All right, so this is an interesting episode. There's pretty much one plot line the entire time. I don't know. I need to start paying better attention. There's no A and B plot in this. I mean, maybe there's an A and B plot between Cyril and Cassian, but they're all in the same place. Most TV shows or movies, are, you know, they have two different plot lines moving at the same time to keep pacing and to keep the audience's interest, but this the entire thing takes place essentially in one location following one plot point.
I mean, I think you could say that like some of the different stories converge at this point, but yeah, for sure, there's no Chandrillan weddings to distract us from the really important stuff that's going on.
I know you missed that aspect of it, though, Doug, didn't you?
Yeah, no, if the Chandrillan wedding party could have been the ones who get shot up in this episode, I would have been perfectly great with that.
Well, take it up with Dan Gilroy. But yeah, and it's also like real time. It seems like it's just like, you know, an actual like hour of time in that area.
Oh, I didn't even think about that. Like that old show 24 or whatever, where everything is real time. Was it? I mean, it could have been.
I think the pacing of it all seemed to flow. There were no jumps. There were no massive skips. It was all...
I'd be interested to watch it again and see if... Yeah. All right, so I guess the plot summary is that we're on Gorman, and the Gorman uprising, the Gorman front has finally, I don't know what the word is, had enough, and they start chanting. They're basically walking through the plaza, and... Actually, I guess we should... The episode starts with Cassian assembling his long-range rifle and sighting it. I got the impression they were very close to attempt, like, you know, within hours, maybe, of attempting an assassination on Daedra. And then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, they start fortifying the building across the street and putting up these, you know, this armor around the building to protect it.
They opened up the plaza area, the courtyard area, whatever, and then, moved the barricades to the building aspect. So that triggered the rebellion and the Gormans to go into the plaza because it was open now to
demonstrate.
Was
the plaza closed before?
Yeah.
Oh, interesting.
Well, and I think there was also a line or two in there somewhere about like the Empire moved in a bunch of mining equipment across the planet.
Well, that's how it starts. And I was going to ask you guys about that because they start fortifying the building and Daedra calls Partagaz and basically says, hey, I'm hearing rumors about these mining rigs that have landed. I don't know anything about that. Can you give me some details on that? And Partagaz, basically, he was like, yeah, don't worry about that. That's nothing you need to worry about. You just focus on the Gorman aggression. So they're using this uprising to, I don't know, sneak in the mining rigs, or they're doing it at the same time on purpose. This is kind of all a smokescreen, is that they're landing the mining rigs with the intent of mining the, what was it, calcite, whatever. They're going to strip mine this planet, and they're going to attempt to, I guess, hide what they're doing with the mining by this uprising, you know, much like we would see on the news now, where everybody's talking about the Epstein files, and then, you know, whatever, there's a school shooting or a malaria outbreak, and you switch the news cycle.
Yeah, Partagaz describes it. The only story that matters now is Gorman aggression, the inexplicable resistance to Imperial norms.
Inexplicable resistance. Yeah. Why would anyone resist?
That's the narrative. And nothing else really matters at this point. It seems like even, you know, stuff is happening above Daedra's pay grade, you know.
Daedra was clearly out of the loop some of the things they were doing, and she was not happy about that. At one point, there's a scene outside of the IOC building that Daedra is working at, and there's two different news reporters reporting live, and they kind of cut between them, and one of them is basically giving the pro-Empire side of this story, and the other one is giving the pro-Gorman side of it. I mean, they're literally 20 feet apart telling totally different stories.
Yeah, oddly accurate, right?
Well, I mean, what's that famous saying? I mean, history is written by the survivors, right? I mean, it's whoever writes the history books, you kind of get to decide what future generations, how they process what happened there, because, you know, the truth can be muddled with, you know, when you write down what happened or didn't happen. So, I mean, I think, right, I mean, we see that on Fox News all the time or on any news organization where they're trying to spin a story of this is either really important or it's really not important. Don't look at this kind of thing.
Or they're trying to, in like schools, either eliminate or change the narrative around slavery and saying,
right,
you know, it was not so bad, or just kind of not talking about it. Yeah, trying to like remove it as a subject.
We see an officer come and track down Cyril, and he says that the comms are down and that they're requesting that all Empire personnel report to the IOC building. Do you guys get the impression they purposely took the comms down?
Oh, yeah.
This is part of the fog of war, is that they are...
100%.
Okay.
Yeah.
I was trying to figure... I mean, how do you organize as the Empire? How do you get your people to go do what they need to do if the comms are down? I mean, clearly the comms work between Daedra and Partagaz, but on the ground... The troops are only able to communicate with each other via, I mean, face-to-face?
I guess. I don't fully understand the tech behind that, but yeah, no,
they didn't really go into it very much, but I know it was kind of interesting that Cassian was having a lot of trouble communicating with Willman over there, comms.
Oh, that's so true. I didn't even think about that. Yeah, like it was all crackly.
Maybe there's a jamming stuff or something. Yeah.
The Gorman... people, Gormanites, whatever, they walk through the...
Did you call them Gormanites?
I don't know. What are they?
They chant it for like half the episode. We are the Gore.
That's what I was just going to say, is they have this, we are the Gore, the galaxy is watching. They have this chant as they walk, which I thought was pretty cool. They're in what's called Palmo Plaza, which is right outside of the IOC building. It's where the statue, the monument to the tragedy was.
I don't mean to nitpick. You keep calling it the IOC building. Did I miss that in the episode, or are we just hating on the International Olympic Committee?
I don't know why, but they call it the IOC building several times in the episode.
Okay.
I don't know what that stands for. I mean, it's the building that the Empire has all their people in. Let's see. There's a couple. So while all this, the people are walking through the plaza, there's a lot of chaos. Cassian was not prepared for this. He was planning on, you know, assassinating Daedra from his second story hotel room, and that's clearly not working out. So he has his scope, I assume, or mini binoculars, and there are several times in this episode where he's down on the ground and he's looking up at Daedra's office and spotting her and trying to get a shot off. He was willing to, even from the chaos of the street, to attempt to take Daedra out. So that's his focus. Even while all of this chaos is going on, he's still dialed in on Daedra to see if they can take her out.
Which I did find kind of interesting. Like, that's what he's zoned in on as being important. But we, as an audience, can kind of see, like, you could take her out. It's not going to change
anything
at this point.
It's too late, right? If she was dead right now, all this is still happening, right? At one point, or a couple different points, TIE fighters fly overhead with their traditional sound. So that's one of the few, I think, ties to the larger Star Wars universe. Again, there's not really much Force. There's not very much lightsabers. There's a very few. We do see a couple TIE fighters in this episode. Cyril finally makes it to the IOC building, and they shuffle him inside, but they won't let him go and see Daedra. They basically shuffle him into a side room full of K2SOs and some other, I don't know, other employees. And he's basically told, just stay here, quote, until things calm down.
Right, which until things calm down means until we shoot all the protesters.
Essentially, yeah. It's not shown, but he gets out of that room later because he goes and confronts Daedra.
Yeah.
I wasn't really sure what happened. Like, does he break out of that room? Did they let him out? I mean, he was clearly very pissed.
I think it was really quick, but I think he just kind of shoved his way past one of the guards to get to Daedra.
That was kind of the impression I got because he was so angry. Yeah.
I'm also, what was your guys' take on that? Because I was a little bit confused. Like, why is he angry? Didn't he know this was...
I wrote that down, too. Like, what's Cyril's motivation here? Like, he... So he basically breaks out of that thing and confronts Daedra in her office as she's looking down on this town square. And let's see. He says... I mean, he walks into her office furious. Like, it's not like, hey, I haven't seen my girlfriend in a while, or oh my gosh, this is crazy. He walks in pissed.
Well, he starts choking her.
He says, how long have you known about all of this? And she kind of like waffles, and he starts choking her, and she tries to basically talk him off the ledge. She says, we're going home as heroes. So she's like, hey, maybe you weren't in on all of the stuff, but we're going to come out on top of this. Specifically, you and me, we're going to look good, right? We're going to get promotions. In fact, she says, you didn't seem to mind all the promotions you were getting. So all this time that he's being a spy on the planet, he's getting promoted, he's doing all these things, and he's out of the loop as far as what the larger plan that Daedra and Partagaz have planned. And so now she's kind of pissed at him, like, whoa, 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 why are you mad at me for not telling you this stuff? Like, you've been involved as much as you needed to be.
And I'm curious what your take on that is, Nuj, because I'm still confused. Like,
he says that he thought the mission was really just trying to get to the outside rebellion infiltrators. And so I think that's what he thinks the mission was. He doesn't know a lot about, you know, the Kalkite. He doesn't know that it was really meant to be like a false flag. And he's starting to be confronted with the reality of how the situation isn't meant to, like, earnestly trying to uncover the rebels. It's meant to use that as an excuse to demolish. You know, he's figuring out the, you know, earlier he confronts Caro, Rylan's the elder.
Corlin, the guy
grabs him, says, like, the wall. I didn't mean any harm. I was just trying to, you know, we were just trying to find the outside agitators. And they talk about, he tells him about the mining equipment. He says that's just rumors, but I think he's at that point, he's realizing what's really going on, and it's way darker and bigger than what he thought.
I think he's realizing clearly he's realizing that he got played, but more importantly, he got played by his girlfriend, right? It's one thing if your boss doesn't give you all the information. It's one thing if your coworkers are working on a side project. It's an entirely different thing when your significant other has all of this subterfuge going on and you're not. I mean, he was involved. I mean, he was boots on the ground, but he didn't have the information.
Yeah.
So I think he's feeling doubly betrayed that A, he didn't have the information, and B, that Daedra was the one that did it.
Yeah. And I think, you know, as much as I hate or I perceived Cyril's character as someone who loves fascism, I think really looking back, it is more he loves justice. You know, he loves doing the right, like what he thinks is the right thing for the right people. Like earlier in the first season when those two soldiers are murdered and his captain actually tells him to brush it away, but he goes above him and actually looks into it because he thinks that's what's right. So in a sense, you know, he does value being right and not as devious as what's actually going on here. So
you're touching on a point that I was going to address a little bit later. I don't want to jump too far ahead, but the question that I'm going to bring up is, what was the purpose of Cyril's story? And I think you kind of touched a little bit on that. But
I want to talk. I mean, the question here, and I had the same question too, is what was Cyril's motivation and what did he think? What did he really think he was doing on that planet? I mean,
yeah,
because he was betrayed. What I took away from it, and as I process it sitting here, I got the impression that Cyril is a rule follower. Things are very black and white for him. He strikes me as the kind of guy who folds his underwear three times before he puts them away. And, you know, he has 40 pairs of the exact same socks. So, you know what I mean? Like, he's type A, typical anal retentive kind of guy. So if you're part of the Empire, that's an easy fit because there are so many rules. All I do all day long is follow the rules. And I enforce I make other people enforce the rules. Mm-hmm. So he's looking at this as the Empire has clearly on, those are the good guys, that's the side I'm on. They've laid out these rules, whatever they are, and now these rebels are coming in and they wanna muck everything up. So it's kind of, I think, maybe black and white for him that I'm a rule follower and this is what I'm going to do, and anybody that doesn't follow the rules is a bad guy. But clearly reality is not that simple. And then I think it kind of crumbles for him when he finds out that Daedra was the one that was betraying him.
Interesting. Okay.
I don't really see it like that, like as far as like he's just a rule follower. I think he feels like the Empire, and most people do in this scenario. I mean, they've spent so much time trying to craft this narrative around Gorman to hide their true intentions. So he was someone that bought into that same narrative. He didn't know that there was a false narrative going on. So there's this pretense of they're doing the right thing. But I think it's shattered in this moment for him. He knows they're not doing the right thing. The only thing they want is something else out, you know, that he doesn't, you know, the Kalkai, he doesn't know specifics, but he realizes it's all a smokescreen. He's seeing that. And so it's this fascist organization sort of spilling over in a way that, you know, he's realizing. I think so, it's more like, you know, the Fox News watcher suddenly realized their host is lying to them.
Right.
Yeah. Well, he does realize that when Daedra says,
yeah,
that's what it's about.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. He does.
And then he storms out of the room. He stops choking her. He doesn't have any fancy lines. He's just as fed up, and he walks out the front of the IOC building, which I thought was interesting. They just let him walk out the building. They were not even letting people in, and he just
Was like kind of chaotic at that little moment.
He basically walks out the front door, hops the barricade, and sort of joins the crowd. Mm-hmm. So not to jump ahead, but he does get killed later. And my
spoilers,
five minutes in the future, spoilers. So my question to you is, having just seen Daedra betray him, had he survived, do you think he would have joined the rebels? Do you think he was that fed up, or was he just more surprised, like, whoa, this just got ahead of me? Because I think I don't know about you, I've kind of all this whole season been like, oh man, Cyril, he's this close, man. He's gonna see the truth and he's gonna flip sides, right? I'm curious if he had survived this, if he would have.
Well, go ahead, Nuj.
That's kind of, I think, one of my criticisms. It's more of a disappointment on this episode, is just the Cyril's end. Like, I think he was a very compelling character. Really liked where they were going with him. The end, you do see a moment of Cassian just saying, like, you know, who are you? That gives him pause, and he relents a little bit, and so you wonder what would happen at that point. We don't see, because he gets ganked right there. So, yeah, it's a little cut short for that character. And we'll just won't know. So I don't know.
See, I think I was expecting, maybe to a degree, with how much we followed him over the last couple of seasons, I was kind of expecting a redemption arc for him, and maybe he joins up with the rebellion and helps Cassian complete his mission or whatever.
I was the opposite of that. I thought he was just a fascist through and through, and he's going to ascend the power ranks. And
I think you hit on it a little bit earlier. He's not a fascist at heart, per se. He is someone who...
He's not power hungry. Yeah.
He believes in justice and order. And what his story is, what I'm kind of putting together, is his story is about how someone, even with altruistic good reasons, can get caught up in the facade of fascism, masquerading as, you know, the champion of truth and order and justice. And that's what happened to him. He got caught up in that. He ended up serving the fascist regime and then realized kind of at the end, like, wait, this is not what I was trying to achieve. This is not justice. This is not order. This is brutality. This is wrong.
Even someone as loyal and as like buttoned up and like mostly for the cause,
but you
gets chewed up, used, and spit out.
Right. You know? Exactly. Yeah. And you question, you know, it's easy to look after the fact and be like, how did people get to that point? But then you see a story like his and you can kind of understand why he took each step along the way. So while it's a bit of a tragic ending for him, I'm happy they didn't do a redemption arc and, yeah, and have him join True. The rebellion. Yeah.
I think...
Agreed.
That would have been the perfect story for him to flip and then join the rebellion, become one of the leaders, right? I feel like that was... They had been building up to that. Whether or not they did it or not, I mean, it would have been a cool story. Like, here is what... You know, like, we keep talking about what's going to be that event that causes Cassian to go full bore into the rebellion. What would be the event in Cyril's mind that would do the same thing, would be being betrayed by the person he loves the most? It seems like it was a potential swing and a miss, right? In Aliens 3, they, like, off screen, they kill Hicks and Newt, who are like the two main characters that would literally have the most hatred for the aliens in moving forward in that storyline, but they kill them off screen. So there's this massive potential for you could do a bunch of more stories with these two characters because we've already laid the backstory for why they're against whatever. We've already laid Cyril's backstory for why he would be upset at this. So if he had joined the Empire, I mean, maybe not even in a leadership role, but if he had just said, you know what, Cassian, let's you and me go off and find K2SO and, you know, whatever. I could totally have seen that. I could see they were setting up the ground rules for that. And then what happens is he literally gets, what, shot in the side of the head by the Gorman front leader. He's dead. And then they kind of just walk out. I mean, it was kind of a slightly underwhelming end for Cyril, really.
Well, yeah, like literally the episode is called Who Are You? When Cassian, you know, says that to... Cyril, like, he doesn't know who he is, and he gets shot and dead and left behind.
Why are you hunting me? Why are you out? Yeah, right.
But there's a maybe I'm reading too much into this, but you kind of talked about it a little bit earlier. There's a subtlety to this that his ending is completely not heroic in any way, shape, or form. There is nothing...
His entire story was a waste, right?
Exactly.
On purpose.
His efforts, his story, his motivation, none of it mattered. He was chewed up and spit out by the machine, so to speak.
He was chewed up and spit out in under 15 minutes.
Yeah.
I mean, he went from being full bore, I'm on board with the Empire, to meeting Daedra to being dead within 15 minutes.
And the line there and the title of the episode, Who Are You?, kind of underscores, in the end... He was nobody.
Right.
He was nothing. The Empire didn't care about him. He didn't make a difference. He...
You know, that's a good point. Is anybody going to mourn his death? I mean, other than Daedra? I don't... The Empire's never going to know.
His mom.
We're getting to the final scene, but yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's true. All right, so let's circle back. Okay, so Cyril runs out of the building, hops the barricade. The protest outside starts escalating. The protesters start throwing rocks and bottles at the troopers. There's some troopers, actually the quote-unquote green troopers are ordered to go up the middle through the protesters and secure the path to the monument.
Right.
It doesn't even make sense. Like, why do you need a path out there? Clearly, they were just out there to agitate the protesters.
100%.
So they're
inexperienced, green, you know, not really trained very well, so... They were meant to cause problems in that situation.
And that's a really tense scene because you've got, whatever, 12, 15 Empire guys like trying to part the Red Sea of these protesters who are clearly pissed at them.
Another you know, human element that's getting chewed up and spit out and used. And this is where reality kind of gets injected for me and like it's just too real, but... The fact that there are soldiers being deployed in different cities, but not even that. It's this new ice, you know, force being mm-hmm. created out of the from the ground up, and just money being sprayed at it, and like random people joining and becoming military, you know, inexperienced military wannabes. It's the playbook. It's literally the playbook.
I got to address this just because this is one of the small details of this episode that actually irritated me a little bit.
Hmm.
Everything else was like, holy crap, the realism was like, I don't mean to be overly dramatic about it, but some of that stuff was giving me like slight PTSD. Like, damn, this feels authentic.
Like for real? Like, I mean, it was, yeah. I wasn't in the military and it was really uncomfortable and tense for me.
But one of the pieces that it was a subtle detail when the commander was like, my whole unit is green. Why? That's not how you do things. You don't do a whole, you mix your veterans and your newbies so that the newbies can learn from the veterans. You never just have a complete unit that's all a bunch of dudes with no experience. That's not how you set up military units. That's not how you train. You would not have that.
I mean, maybe they just grabbed, like, there's a basic unit somewhere, and they just, like, said, hey, you guys are not finished with your basic, but you're needed over in Gorman.
But that's not how you do it.
Are you implying that they purposely picked a bunch of green people with the expectation that they're going to get slaughtered?
If I'm being a bit meta about this, no. I'm implying that Dan Gilroy wrote that expecting us not to question it.
Oh, okay.
But I think
because it wouldn't make sense if you're expecting to send a troop out in the field that you know is going to get slaughtered, is going to be part of this. You don't put your best people in it, right?
Isn't that the whole point of them doing that, though?
They are absolutely sacrificial lambs. They're sent out there to agitate and to become a target, to make
a mistake. Really.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But that part isn't realistic to me because you wouldn't have an untrained, unexperienced unit out there. You might have a couple of guys who have never been through that, but they would be mixed in with others that have had more experience in training.
Well, let's talk about the tipping point here. So Cyril has now run off and Daedra is emotional, angry, upset, whatever. And trying
she has a bit of a panic attack thing. That was a pretty cool scene.
Really. Her hand was shaking. Yeah, I was impressed. That was
because there was that screenshot of her with her like being choked. You know, that was early on. It was spoiled, and everyone was like, "Oh, is Darth Vader going to make an appearance and choke her?" But it ended up just being her.
I didn't even put two and two together. She loosens her collar.
Yeah.
Right before she has that panic attack, she loosens her collar.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't realize that was because that was right after she got choked and she was, oh, wow, okay.
Can I be really, really wrong with this?
Sure.
Do you think that was actually just a sex thing and she was like...
Yeah, I got the impression from that. I'm like, probably like this is not the first time Cyril has choked her, right?
They've played like this before.
All right, so let's talk about... Okay, so Daedra has many panic attacks trying to get control of the situation. Her boyfriends just run off out into the thing. They ask her what she wants to do. Long story short, she says, move forward with full force, or I don't remember what the exact words. But what ends up happening is they communicate with the snipers on the roof, and there are snipers surrounding pretty much the entire plaza, and they basically tell them to open fire. And the interesting thing was that you see through the scope of the primary sniper, and he aims at he starts to sight in one of the protesters on the front line. And then at the last minute, he actually changes his aim and shoots at one of the Empire soldiers and kills him, which really sets off the violence because now the Empire has an excuse to be even more dictatorial because one of their people has died.
So I don't mean to dominate the conversation, but this addresses a point that you had kind of asked before we started recording, like what could motivate when a soldier's given the order to open fire on a civilian population, like what motivates them to follow that order versus question it and say, no, this is wrong.
Oh.
If their own life is a threat, which is exactly the situation they put them in, because once that soldier got shot, now the threat is, oh my God, they're shooting at us. We need to shoot back to defend ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
That's why they open fire. If they had just ordered and said, hey, shoot those civilians, yeah, there'd probably be some pushback on it. Some people would be like, I'm not cool with that. But when you put them in a situation where you need to shoot the civilians because now they're shooting at you, okay, that's more of an us against them type of scenario.
But that first sniper made a conscious decision.
Oh, 100%.
That he was going to, yeah, okay.
Yeah, that dude evil.
Yeah.
Well, that dude I don't think was the person that made that plan. I think the whole open fire actually command is actually like throwing a little bit of a confusion. I mean, I think the plan was to, you know, the order that was behind the scenes was to kill one of those green soldiers, which would trigger the ability for...
You and I are saying the same thing.
Yeah. Okay. So not necessarily that guy, but he could have made a different decision because it was his life. So obviously he's pretty bad, evil.
Yeah, that sniper guy, he started the whole galactic war. I mean, really boils down to him.
Maybe we'll get a spinoff show of just that guy.
Yeah.
So clearly once the snipers open fire on this, up to this point, unarmed crowd, other than, I suppose, rocks and bottles, all hell breaks loose. There's mass panic. We see Willman runs up kind of into the middle of the monument, which I couldn't figure out why he was in the amount. Maybe it was just the most central place to be, but he's kind of like in the middle of this monument. A Molotov cocktail gets thrown at the barriers. I mean, and it's just chaos now at this point.
Mm-hmm.
There's another scene right here. Daedra goes to the ledge and she's looking out on, you know, this chaos that she's just started. Cassian has a quick bead on her from behind a pillar, but he doesn't get it. He doesn't get a shot off. And then we see, and I don't know if this is the right word, but we see the K2SO robots. There's probably a better name for them because K2SO is a specific one.
KX units is the general
so
term.
So we see these KX units, probably, what, 8 of them? 12 of them, maybe? Mm-hmm. They get deployed, and then things get really violent because they start just crushing people. They're very fast and very strong, and you can't shoot them. They start executing a lot of people. So when the KX units get deployed, the tides turn very quickly.
I liked and kind of hated at the same time the realism of they pick someone up, throw them 30 feet. That person is not okay.
Yeah.
I watched John Wick 4 last night. And there was a scene where he falls like 40 feet off a balcony, lands on top of a van, like caves in the roof of the van, rolls over, and then slowly picks himself up and dusts himself off. I'm like, what the hell?
Yeah.
That was not the case with this episode. Motherfuckers were getting beat up.
The lady that got thrown was the Gorman Front's daughter.
Yep.
And she got thrown. I wrote down, she got thrown a solid 30 feet onto a cement plaza. She was not getting up. Yeah,
she's dead.
Yeah,
yeah. It was pretty brutal. Just that whole scene.
The KX units kick butt was very.
Not only that, just the innocent protesters that you could see didn't really expect this. Just sort of like they looked very. It was very violent, and yeah, they're just opening fire onto like these protesters essentially. Yeah.
You used the right word. Brutal. It was very brutal.
Yeah.
There's a cool, like a 360-degree pan. Cyril is in the middle of all this now, and there's a cool 360-degree pan around him as he looks at the crowd and he looks at the chaos and the violence, and he has this very shell-shocked look on his face. I mean, he basically just got done fighting with his girlfriend, and now he's just watching people in every direction get slaughtered around him. We see, and then Cyril ends up running into Cassian, and they get in a fight in, I guess, in that coffee shop is where they ended up.
Yeah, I think so. Mm-hmm.
And they get in a just kind of a brutal fist fight. And I actually wrote down that Cyril kind of kicks Cassian's butt at the beginning, which was very surprising to me because Cyril's just a middle manager bean counter. Like, I don't get the impression he's in shape or knows how to fight, whereas Cassian is a scrapper. Like, I really kind of expected Cassian just to kick his ass.
But Cyril also completely blindsided him.
Yeah,
and
he got the jump.
Don't underestimate the power of adrenaline and literally fighting for your life.
He was way more amped up about what his emotional state versus Cassian, who's like, literally, who are you? You know? So yeah, you could tell there was more, it was adrenaline versus like someone who's well-trained.
But I will say, I mean, at least Cyril knew how to fight. He threw a couple punches. He knew how to tell you. If it was me and I was in that situation as a 46-year-old IT guy, it's going to look way different because I don't know how to fight and I'm not in shape. That was sort of what I was expecting more from Cyril, but he held his own. For a short amount of time, long story short, they get in a fight. Cassian's on the ground. Cyril has a gun. He's just about to shoot him. Cassian looks up at him and says, "Who are you?" Confused, like, "Why are you, where did this come from?" Just kind of just blown away that Cyril came out of nowhere and is trying to kill him. And then, boom, the Gorman front leader, what's his name?
Caro
comes in the side door and shoots Cyril in the side of the head, essentially, and kills him before he has a chance to shoot Cassian. And that's it. That's the end of Cyril. Yeah.
Unceremoniously, he's done.
Yeah. It makes sense that Caro shot him because they had that, like, tussle earlier. And
that's a good point,
He's realizing that how much he betrayed them, and so I can see
there was motivation there. There was recognition, like, oh, I know this guy. He deserves to be shot.
Yeah, he's also aiming a gun at someone else that he knows, so yeah.
No, you're right. That was
That's a good, yeah, I didn't think about that. He does have good motivation to just straight up execute Cyril for working against them for so many months.
Again, subtle, but well-founded.
Yeah, everything's just really well put together, I mean, as always, yeah.
I do want to note the sound design and the tension throughout this were really good.
Holy crap, man. I've watched this episode a couple of times, and I don't know about you guys, but after it's done, I just feel exhausted from being tense the whole time.
I got choked up like several times, like, because it hits so close to home.
That's really where I was thinking that this... I didn't feel as tense as I normally would, because that's really where the weakness of it being a prequel is for me. Like,
you know,
knowing that Cassian is going to make it out of this fight with Cyril, knowing, you know, what's going to end up happening, it adds just a sort of a layer of like, I can't really get as intense.
See, it was so good that didn't bug me. I mean, right.
It was really good.
One thing I want to, before I forget about it, right before... they order those green troops to go march up the middle. And the one general kind of pushes back. He was like, whoa, dude, all of those troops are green and that's a suicide mission. The guy that made the order looks him in the eye, and I don't remember his exact line, but he says, you can follow my order or you can spend the rest of your life in the brig. Right. And that hit really close to home, like the Hegseth meeting. Like, that's the shit that's happening right now. They're like, you fall in line or you're done. I mean, you've been in the military 30 years, four-star general. Don't care. You got to follow my orders or you're done.
Yeah. That is a good point. And that is unfortunately, some of the rhetoric that we're hearing in real life today. But just to touch on it, I don't want to, like, speak for you, but I would assume maybe some of the lack of tension for you. Yes, there's the prequel aspect of it, but I'm also assuming that part of it is you don't really care about those damn dirty Gormans. Is that?
I am racist against Gormans.
Filthy,
so,
I think you used the word.
I mean, they do. They're a facsimile for French people, which, you know. So
I want to talk real quick.
Which suck with people. They suck.
Did you notice, like, the music they were playing? There was very, like, horror movie vibes, like the low violin, low bass.
Yes.
To build the tension, I thought was cool.
Yep.
Yeah, some cool, and like the intro had, the music is just crazy good, but like the intro had some singing in it, and the subtitle said gore singing. So like,
I just wanted to talk about that. They were talking, they were chanting, we are the gore, the galaxy is watching. Mm-hmm. And then like halfway through, the one guy starts singing, and I can only assume it's the Gorman national anthem. And
Or like America the Beautiful.
Yeah, it's some sort of nationalist style of song. And then the entire crowd gets into it. So you have an entire crowd singing this song of, you know, I don't know how many people, 100, whatever. but they're all singing in a foreign language. It sounded good. I mean, it was kind of haunting, mm-hmm. but I was just wondering from a production standpoint, number one, how do you get that many people to sing a song in a language they don't know? And B, how do you make it sound good? I was surprised. It was a cool thing that they did, but I imagine logistically that was probably hard to pull off.
Yeah, I wonder what's the behind the scenes magic for something like that.
You know, like it's one thing to get, you know, to have Michael Dorn learn a couple Worf lines in Klingon, right?
Sure.
It's a whole different thing to get 100 people to sing a song in a foreign language that doesn't exist.
I don't know. I did choir in high school and we sang a bunch of stuff in Latin. I had no idea what it was.
You know, I guess that's a good point. I guess so maybe they just brought in a choir and just, okay, maybe. All right, fair enough.
But I do wonder how much of the Gore language they actually made because it does appear to have its own language, so...
Well, let's finish out the episode because we're close to the end. Let's see. Cyril gets killed, and Willman and Cassian are in that coffee shop with the other leader of the Gorman Front. Willman is really worried about Drina.
Yeah.
I'm not really sure where that came from because when they were doing the mission, like they were worried about Drina being a kind of a traitor, and now like Willman and her are like she's his girlfriend. Anyway,
yeah, he was getting some earlier.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I'm just, it went from she's probably a traitor, we got to keep an eye on her, to all of a sudden, Willman and her are hooking up. Willman wants to leave. Oh, no, Cassian wants to leave, and Willman wants to go find Drina.
He put some motivation into her, some rebel motivation.
He put a little rebel into her, too, I'm sure. The KX units are really wrecking things now. Everybody's trying to flee. Cassian is basically pinned down by this KX unit. Well,
yeah, that to me was such an awesome bit where you suddenly start to hear like a crowd like screaming in bloody horror, and there's a crowd running from a hallway, and you're like, "What the heck?" And it's just one of those KX units throwing people against walls and just like, I mean, really imposing and dreadful.
I would point out this really does underscore that those green soldiers were sacrificial lambs because if you've got that kind of firepower, why wouldn't you lead with that?
Yeah, that's a really good point.
Go have those robots clear the path.
You could have had them come out and just destroy everyone.
Yeah, but that's not what they were going for. They wanted the rebels to shoot first, so to speak.
Yeah. They wanted those video clips to end up on TikTok so that it...
Yep.
You can blame the Gorman Front.
And they've created this culture now of it doesn't matter who shoots first. And any old guy can just shoot first anytime they want. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Cassian's just about to get killed by this KX unit. And Sam, I'm not sure who Sam is. They say his name.
So he's the guy.
Shows up in that tank and crushes the KX unit against the wall. Cuts it in half.
Mm-hmm.
He was the one that accidentally killed Cinta.
Oh, his redemption arc, maybe? Okay, all right.
Bit, yeah.
I did write down the droids in Andor are actually threatening, ? If we look at any of the rest of the Star Wars universe, I mean, C-3PO is useless. R2-D2 can, you know, spit out some oil slicks and, you know, hack some computers. All of the droids in the prequels are useless. But these KX units are gnarly.
I'm surprised you, being the prequel expert, would not bring up the droidicus.
Okay, so you do have the battle. You're right. Those are a formidable force.
The Jedi are like saying scene, they're like, "What? They sent two droidicus?" You know. So those are
all right, fair enough.
But yeah, I wonder, these KX units are so powerful. I just wonder, like, why aren't we seeing more of these types of things?
Stop making all the others and just make those.
Right. It seemed like pretty good.
Yeah, right. I mean, the prequels, they built these entire armies of these just completely useless droids.
Clankers.
Yeah. Like, you know what I mean? Like, they built thousands of these droids, and they're just
millions,
horrendous.
Presumably millions, because they're across multiple planets and star systems. And
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All right, so... Yeah. They're just about to leave, Willman wants to leave, and he says, "Hey," Cassian looks at him, "Hey, before you go, can you do one last favor?" And you don't know what it is, and then it cuts to the inside of the tank, and Cassian is driving it away, and the two halves of that KX unit are in the tank with him. So the last favor was to basically bring this robot into the tank.
Yeah, and if you had the subtitles on, Cassian looks back and says, "We have to figure out how to put Alan Tudyk in this."
Is that? Yeah. Okay.
What's kind of interesting is that that droid is what got him arrested too. Like, originally in season one.
So not I think that he droid, does, but that line no, of
that
droids,
type of okay, droid.
Yeah. Right.
So I think he has a bit of a.
Oh, I didn't think about that. So he's got a little history with it. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think that may be one reason why he took a second look at it, just because it affected him so much.
So as Cassian's driving away with the two halves of this KX unit, we hear Drina on the radio talking about just broadcasting to anyone about the massacre and calling for help. Her line was, "The conspiracy we feared is real. It's here today." And so she's clearly shaken and emotional. Like, she's just witnessed a massacre, and they're basically broadcasting to the entire universe. We done got fucked. Somebody needs to come help us, because we are way outmatched here. We see TIE fighters fly over the smoking city, the what's left of the Palmo Plaza. Daedra weeps in a small room of the IOC now that the majority of the chaos has calmed down.
I hate her so much.
Right. And then the episode ends with Cyril's mom watching the news back on Coruscant about the violence on Gorman.
Let me ask you guys this question. What's going through Cyril's mom's head?
I assume she's worried that her son has got wrapped up in this or got hurt. I mean, as a parent, that would be my concern.
I think the implication is that she realized that her son is dead in that moment, but I don't know. It was a little too vague for that to be the case.
It's an interesting note to end on, right?
Yeah. If it had ended with Cassian driving that tank with the two pieces of the robot off into the sunset star wipe, perfect ending, but it doesn't. They specifically cut to, I forget Cyril's mom's name, watching the news. And yeah, she's a little concerned.
Also notably, the entire episode takes place on Gorman, except that scene, the final scene. That's the note that Dan wanted us to go out on. Hmm. Why? What message was he trying to leave us with?
I assume essentially that the world is watching. It's on the news. Everyone is seeing this.
Well, they're seeing the narrative.
Right. They're not. Okay.
The reality. So maybe that's it. Yeah, but it was very brief. It's a good point. That is the only other shot that's not on Gorman. That's another location.
I want to just briefly, we need to wrap it up. Yeah. Just briefly, I want to talk about Cassian's motivation for taking the KX unit. I'm trying to remember. It's been a while since I've seen Rogue One. Clearly, Cassian and K3SO are friends in that. What's their introduction? Was he afraid of KX units in Rogue One? I mean, having seen this massive slaughter, where are they going with him taking this robot is what I'm getting at. Clearly, like, I think they're setting it up that he builds K3SO, but I don't remember K3SO's origin story.
Not to be pedantic, K2.
Oh, sorry, yes.
But this is a little bit of in-universe brilliance. Mandalorian already set this up because they took the assassin bot and were able to successfully reprogram it. So that's where he's going with this. Oh, I've got this droid that's out of commission right now, I can reprogram it and bring it back and basically use it as a tool for the rebellion.
Okay, so he's stealing their weapons to reprogram and use them against.
Essentially, yeah.
Okay, all right.
That seemed pretty straightforward to me. I don't know.
I thought that was the impression too, but it was just kind of, they're like, I didn't friends. Remember.
He already has the droid, right, in Rogue One?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. That's I haven't seen it in a while.
No, yeah. Absolutely, he does.
So when Rogue One opens, Cassian and K2SO are friends and doing stuff?
Yeah, the first introduction of K2 is when Jyn Erso tries to escape out the back of the transport, and K2 grabs her, throws her to the ground, and says, "You're being rescued. Congratulations."
Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. But they were already friends. They had a relationship. So this is our backstory of, well, how did they meet?
The origin story. Okay, gotcha. All right, well, we need to wrap it up. I'm all ratings, 10 out of 10.
10.
Flawless.
I give it a 9.
You're wrong.
One little tidbit was just when him and Willman part, he mentions sky and stone, and I just looked that up, and it's like the funeral chant from Ferrix.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty awesome. And yeah, I think I already mentioned just the little bits that I kind of found. Cyril's end was pretty disappointing, or just a little unsatisfying.
Right.
I don't think it was unrealistic. I don't think it wasn't well done, but a little unsatisfying. But yeah, overall, really good episode. So yeah.
I would agree with unsatisfying until you said what you said earlier. I kind of felt that way, and then you kind of made the puzzle piece click for me. Oh, I get it now. His story is really to highlight the tragedy of
being... Did you need that much of a build-up just to communicate that?
I think so, turns him into a real character and not just some throwaway bit in the
episode.
Bad guy,
yeah.
I'm kind of with Doug. I think that is his story, is he's this complex character. He was not just a rube that got swept up in this machine. He was part of it. He knew what he was doing. He had motivation. And what's his payoff? Nothing. I mean, right? I mean, isn't that true of a lot of soldiers that don't come back? I mean, you're just getting ground up by this machine that you had nothing to do with.
And the machine doesn't care about you.
Right. That's what I think it boils down to, is the machine does not care about you. You are just food for the slaughter.
Yeah, but I would have liked to see more of him.
I can see, yeah, I could see it both ways.
Okay.
Either way, 10 out of 10, great episode. We do know Dan Gilroy won an Emmy for writing on Andor, but it was not this episode. Is that what you looked up, Jason?
I think it was the next episode.
Right, that's what you said.
Either way, that Dan Gilroy wrote this episode, and it was chef's kiss. Great.
This episode did win for production design for an Emmy.
Yeah.
So definitely a good episode. And I don't know if I mentioned this on the recording, but it got a 9.7 out of 10 IMDb rating. So it's got to be one of the highest rated episodes.
You didn't look at the show. Is that the highest rated for this season? Do you know?
No, I don't know. I can check.
Okay.
I wonder what they're going to do for Andor season 3.
Too soon. Too soon. All right. Logic gate.
Look out. Ow. Ow.